You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Federal agents recently revealed the key to tracking down a low-level accused drug dealer in Wayne County was a device that has been used in the war on terror. It's called Stingray, and it helped police track down and arrest a suspected drug dealer in Inkster. Just what is Stingray, and what are the legal and ethical challenges in using it in local police work? Stephanie LaCambra is a criminal defense staff attorney. She's with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Stephanie, welcome.
Thank you so much.
What is a Stingray system? How does it work?
Stingray is actually the brand name given by the Harris Corporation, which is the manufacturer. It's actually a cell site simulator. Basically, what the machine does is it tricks your cell phone into thinking that it is a cell base station, a cell tower, and the strongest cell tower in the area, so that it drops the closest cell tower, it drops off the network and connects to this cell site simulator instead. As a result, you'll lose actual service, your ability to make or receive calls. Instead, all of your information will be siphoned off by this machine that is run by law enforcement.
Okay, so that's what we apparently saw in this particular arrest that happened in Inkster, because apparently the accused said, "How did you find me?" when police came to the door.
Well, basically, there's no way to tell. There are a couple of applications in development. One of them that will help people try and determine if they're being targeted. I think the acronym they use is AIMSICD, and right now I think it's only available on Android. It's the Android IMSI Catcher Detector. Otherwise, there's no way for an individual to know whether the network interference is in fact caused by a Stingray or if it's just general problems with their network.
So I know there have got to be some legal and ethical challenges with this, because the Justice Department came out with some pretty sweeping guidelines recently for this snooping device. What were those?
The DOJ finally came out and said they were changing their policy and requiring their law enforcement agents to obtain a warrant prior to deploying a cell site simulator. The issue with it is it's not specifically targeted to a specific cell phone. A cell site simulator will interrupt network traffic for anyone within 200 to 500 meter radius of the device. So completely innocent parties that are caught, the neighbor, someone who happens to be walking their dog in front of the suspect's house, all of these people's information is being compromised by use of the cell site simulator.
So the DOJ says its investigators need to obtain a warrant. Does that apply to local police agencies?
It does not. And there is no uniform policy yet that has been established across local police departments. It's currently being done on a case-by-case basis. The American Civil Liberties Union is trying to roll out legislation to try and get more public and judicial oversight of the use of surveillance technology by law enforcement, specifically the cell site simulators, but basically any kind of street-level surveillance that's being acquired with public money.
Have there been court fights about using this device?
Absolutely, both at the state and federal level. Because of the differing standards, there are some cases that were investigated prior to the change in the DOJ policy where even the federal government didn't obtain an actual warrant. What they were doing was applying for what they call a trap and trace warrant or court order. It's a pen register. They would present to the judicial officer, tell the judge, hey, all we're going to do is look at the numbers that are being called by a specific cell phone, and wouldn't overtly tell them that they were going to be using a cell site simulator or any of the technology involved or the civil rights implications because of non-disclosure agreements that they've been signing with both the company that sells them and the manufacturers are very, as you can imagine, very secretive and trying to keep a lot of the details of the device secret by having law enforcement agencies sign these non-disclosure agreements that would then keep them from revealing it to judicial officers that they're applying to for warrants. And as a result, you would get these court orders that law enforcement is saying they're using, you know, to justify the deployment, but then they are not actually communicating to those judicial officers the reality of the privacy implications of the techniques they're using.
And there's no way, if I'm walking by that house, for me to know if my phone is being monitored by this system?
No. Currently, there's no way to tell. If you're sophisticated enough to check your phone to see whether the name of the cell tower is changing. If your battery starts draining all of a sudden very quickly, you notice significant changes in connectivity, like all of a sudden you get a much stronger signal in a place where you normally wouldn't get very good service. I mean, there are a lot of clues that you can look for, but there's no way to definitively tell for certain if it's because of a cell site simulator interference.
You know, Stephanie, for decades, as we know, if someone's suspected of breaking the law, law enforcement can approach that person's financial institution and they have to cooperate. So here we are, this new digital age, and some believe cell phones operate on the same grounds. Could we see this change?
Well, the state of the law hasn't kept pace with the progress of technology. And I think the wrinkle in the law has been that law enforcement has used that old kind of analog of bank records or a pen register. Oh, because this information is being shared with a third party, they're saying, well, you don't have a right to any kind of expectation of privacy in that information because you're sharing it with someone else. I mean, think of all of the sensitive data that people on a day-to-day basis are conveying over their cellular networks, your emails, your dating history, your medical history, your banking information, all of these things that normally in, you know, prior to the advent in all of this technology would have been kept in the home, would have been kept in private spaces, is being conveyed to a third party, your, you know, internet service provider or your mobile app provider, but people still believe, have, I think, this false sense of security that that information is not going to be publicly shared with law enforcement or advertisers that are trying to buy up info in order to do targeted advertising. And that's a problem. People need to understand that just because they use their cell phone, they don't need to give up their right to privacy.
My understanding is you're hoping to put this question and get it to the Supreme Court.
Yes, we are actually filing an amicus brief in the Graham and Carpenter cases, which they have to do specifically with cell site location information, what law enforcement has been doing to basically drill down on or locate a suspect is to get all of your historical cell site information where your cell phone, as it connects to various towers, reveals your location based on where the cell signal is coming from. And we're basically petitioning the Supreme Court to look at this third-party doctrine to see whether or not it really still makes sense to be applied to things like cell site location information or information that you convey through technological or digital means.
In essence, stay tuned.
Yes.
Stephanie LaCambra, criminal defense staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you so much.